Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thank you very much to Chris and Kira for keeping us company over the past couple of hours. It is Thursday, the 9th of September. Good evening from Damien O'Mara. You are very welcome to Game On. Coming up between now and 7 o'clock, Tyrone great Philip Jordan gives us a Northern view ahead of Saturday's All-Ireland final versus Mayo as their opponents look to build on their semi-final heroics. As the computer crashes. Just with hours ahead of the return of the NFL, Jeff Shepherd will give us as much hype as he can for the American football season as Tom Brady makes his, well, I was going to say his return, but his prolonged existence within the sport as Tampa look to press on from last year. We're also going to have Fiona Coughlin previewing a huge trio of games for the Irish women's rugby team as they look to secure Rugby World Cup qualification. And in our regular Green Farm nutrition slot, Orla Walsh will discuss how elite athletes manage their sleep. All of that to come between now and 7 o'clock. You can text us. Our number is 51552. You can tweet the program at GameOn2FM. And if you're listening through the spectrum or the miracle of the RT Radio Player app, you can send us a message straight into studio. So all of that to come between now and 7 o'clock. I hope you can keep us company over the course of the next while. We've got a busy ongoing evening of sport. The BMW PGA Championship is ongoing. Wentworth looking to bring the curtain down on an impressive European Tour season, and it's a massive weekend for a lot of players, most notably from an Irish perspective, Shane Lowry, who's looking to cement his place in the European Ryder Cup team. Details on his progression in a moment, but it is the European Ryder Cup captain, Padraig Harrington, who is the leading Irish player as it stands. He's 2 under par playing the final hole of his opening round. Jonathan Caldwell in the clubhouse, 1 under par. Graham McDowell in the clubhouse, 1 under par. Shane Lowry still on course. He's 1 under after 17. Cormac Sharvin has 10 holes of his opening round played. He's at 2 over par. Kira Desh, Afi Barnrat is the leader alongside Christian Ben Houth, who are both on 8 under par, 1 shot clear of Adam Scott. So, the important thing from Shane Lowry's perspective, he's in the final automatic qualification spot for the Ryder Cup in advance of play concluding this weekend. The five players have already guaranteed their place. Padraig Harrington will name a couple of, well, three wildcards on Sunday evening. I think it is now widely accepted Sergio Garcia and Ian Poulter will be amongst those wildcards. So Shane Lowry is looking to cement his place in that group. So we will wish him well across the weekend and much more to come on the Ryder Cup in the coming weeks. It's right on the horizon. So all eyes on Whistling Straits. Elsewhere in sport today, Irish international Shirley McKay has decided to call time on her international career following a remarkable 14-year spell with the Irish team. The Tyrone native made 316 appearances for the Irish national hockey side. That, quite understandably, is a record number of appearances. It says in hockey, but you'd be doing well now, I would say, to find someone who has represented Ireland on more than 316 occasions in elite sport. So we wish her well, and what a better way. I know there was ultimate disappointment for the hockey squad in Tokyo. They feel they didn't quite live up to the expectation that they had placed upon their own shoulders. But I was listening back to an interview she did after they were beaten by Team GB and knocked out of the Olympics, and she talked about them being 18 little girls from Ireland who were standing on the shoulders of the giants who had gone before them. But I think if most neutral hockey observers were looking ahead, they would say that she most definitely is the giant of all giants. Such is what she has done for Irish hockey. Elsewhere, the Republic of Ireland manager Vera Powell has recalled Savannah McCarthy, Harriet Scott and Claire Shine to the Irish squad for their upcoming international friendly against Australia at Tallaght Stadium. That game takes place on Tuesday the 21st. It's set to be screened live on RT2 television. It's obviously follows on from the announcement that the Women's World Cup qualifier against Georgia, the FIFA World Cup qualifier, has been postponed until June. The FAI submitted a request to the Georgian Football Federation and UEFA to change that fixture due to the unavailability of Ireland's UK-based players. Georgia has been placed on a red list by the UK government due to COVID-19 issues. That squad would have been without a number of players for that Group A opener. The FAI also confirming today the the unveiling of Sky as the first standalone partner for the women's national team. So a big development for them there. The Premier League is joined with the rest of Europe's top competitions in announcing its opposition to FIFA's plans for a World Cup every 2 years. Arsene Wenger, having finished dealing with the politics at the Emirates Stadium, is now dealing with politics within FIFA. He's been tasked with examining whether shortening the gap between the finals from 4 years to two is possible. We preview the Camogie All-Ireland finals last night. Linda Collins has been named to lead Cork. They're bidding for their 29th title against Galway at Croke Park on Sunday. She comes in for Orla Cronin, whose three-game suspension has been imposed following her sending off in the semi-final. The bid to overturn that set to be appealed to the hearings committee of the Camogie Association tomorrow night. And Gordon Elliott is back in action. He's set to have a handful of runners at the flat meeting in Punchestown on Tuesday after his 6 month suspension, quite notable, quite documented, expired on Thursday. So they are some of the headlines. We'll keep an eye on the golf as the evening progresses, but we are going to go stateside and talk to Jeff Shepherd. Shep, how are you?
I'm great, Damo. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm not too bad. I would have played your jingle, but I have managed to break everything. It's one of those evenings.
I saw on Twitter the other day you're supposed to hit the Kit Kat bar, right?
Yeah, sorry, this is going to be a really naive question. You do have Kit Kats in the States. Kit Kats are not an exclusively Irish confectionery, I presume.
They have been one of my favorite candies since I was a child.
Do you know that I recently travelled to Tokyo for the Olympic Games?
I saw on the Twitters, yes.
And the only two recognisable brands of chocolate that I could get in the 7-Eleven or the Lawson beside our hotel were either a Snickers or a Kit Kat. And, you know, I don't want to be one of these guys who's like, you know, I've left Ireland and I've brought like Tato crisps and Dairy Milk chocolate with me. But
right.
There does come a point when you're away for a couple of weeks that you're like, Jesus, I'd murder a Kit Kat. So, yeah.
I mean, look, Snickers and Kit Kat, man, you're talking my language.
Yeah, now, would you be a man who would place... We will talk about sport in a second. Would you be a man who would place your Kit Kat in the fridge to cool it down and give it that little bit of extra intensity when it comes to breaking your Kit Kat fingers?
Yes, I do enjoy a little bit of a chill to it. It's delicious in ice cream. I'll take them whenever I can get them.
Yes. I know people who freeze their Dairy Milk chocolate and eat it straight from the freezer. It's not something I've tried yet, but maybe, you know, life is for living. I've got plenty of years ahead of me. Maybe I can embrace these obsessions.
You are a young lad. You should try something new every day.
Now, speaking of not quite so young men, see the segue I've done there?
You can't teach that in school, kids. Just something that's in you.
These are air miles that you gain from broadcasting, you know, over the years. So Tom Brady, 58 years of age. Everyone has navigated the NFL close season. The action returns tonight. Now, dare I ask, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have put out a fantastic video promoing the new season. But realistically, if you were relying on a man at 58 years of age, albeit Tom Brady, to win you back-to-back Super Bowls, is there something wrong with your recruitment strategy?
Hey, Damien, I'm back.
Oh, sorry. See, I'm breaking everything. I was asking you in a very roundabout way, if you're relying on a 58-year-old man to bring you back-to-back Super Bowls, is there something wrong with your recruitment strategy?
No, well, see, and that's the amazing thing here. We're, you know, obviously talking about Tom Brady and the kickoff of the NFL season tonight, the defending Super Bowl champion Buccaneers going to take on the Dallas Cowboys. It's hard to comprehend, but he's going to start out as the favorite to win his 8th Super Bowl.
Which is just like there are successful franchises who haven't made it to 8 Super Bowls, let alone one man who has won 8 Super Bowls.
Oh, I mean, there's some franchises who haven't made the playoffs 8 times. If they haven't been around long enough. I mean, it's unbelievable to think that, you know, he's put himself in this position. And Damien, the Buccaneers return all 22 starters, 11 on offense and 11 on defense. They have their entire team back. Now, look, I mean, you could argue that they were one or two plays away from winning, I mean, from losing a playoff game last year and not even qualified to make it to the Super Bowl. But, hey, they made it through and they won it. And so they're the favorites in the NFC, the NFC conference to represent that side, between Tampa, the Green Bay Packers and, you know, maybe the San Francisco 49ers or Seattle, kind of whoever comes out of the West. And then on the other side of things, you know, you've got Kansas City looking to make their third straight Super Bowl. They won it 2 years ago. They lost last year to Tampa. They're going to open up with Cleveland. This weekend, and Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr. and that whole show. Cleveland and Buffalo made a big improvement last year. Can they unseat Kansas City in the AFC? I mean, those are the three top teams over there. So, you know, it's going to be an incredibly competitive season. It always is. They added a 17th game this year, so you have one extra week of regular season football. Seven teams make the playoffs. I mean, everybody's really excited about it. And tonight, you throw in the Dallas Cowboys as well, and Dak Prescott's back after his big injury last year. So it's going to be a great weekend of football.
Now, we are slowly getting to a situation where we have not capacity crowds, but increasing crowds back at outdoor sporting events, but yeah. I presume from an NFL perspective, you know, it's all business tonight, and we're going to be bearing witness to stadia that are packed to the rafters.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, it's so this game this weekend's in Florida, and they have been, you know, pretty open about letting people, you know, move around in the state of Florida. I mean, some venues are asking, you know, to show proof of vaccination, you know, to get into the stands. I know, like, the New Orleans Saints will be doing that, you know, and some of the other bigger cities will be doing that. But, yeah, I mean, look, it's all, you know, all politics is local. And so, you know, some places are a little bit more strict. Some places are a little bit more lenient. It depends if you have a dome versus an outdoor stadium. I mean, the stadium tonight is outdoor. But, yeah, so, no, you should have full stadiums, you know, across the NFL this year.
And is vaccination amongst players a contentious issue?
So, yeah. So, I mean, this has been something Marie and I talked about this a week or two ago. Some players are pretty open and pretty adamant that they do not want to get vaccinated and they don't have any plans to do it. And look, it is going to cause problems. I mean, it already has in some instances. I mean, there's players that are missing the game tonight because they've tested positive or they've, you know, not test. They haven't been vaccinated, but they've come into contact with some players. The NFL is not giving any leeway. You know, last year they would, you know, maybe push a game back a couple of days or rearrange the schedule or give a team an off week to switch or something like that. They're not doing anything like that this year. I mean, they've basically come out and said it is on the team to deal with their players or their coaches, how they're going to travel, how are they going to live, you know, how are they going to handle if they're unvaccinated. So that is going to be an underlying factor. I mean, there are some high-profile players in the league who have basically said they don't plan on getting vaccinated. I mean, we're talking like quarterbacks and different things. So that could really cause problems.
Yeah, you know, back to sporting matters. You mentioned quarterbacks. Like, obviously, the Patriots ditching Cam Newton was a massive story a couple of weeks ago. My interest in my love for Chicago, my interest is now gone from the Cubs because they've cleared out basically anyone who was worth having. So I'm back firmly with the Bears. But, like, you look at Andy Dalton, Justin Fields there, San Francisco, that we are going to have this beautiful scenario that we enjoyed in Irish rugby for a long time, where you had Ronan O'Gara and David Humphreys and then Ronan O'Gara and Johnny Sexton, and it became this, like, civil war between which out half in rugby you were behind. Are we going to have a similar situation with quarterbacks this year, that it's, you know, families divided down the middle?
Right. And I mean, look, it's kind of the nature of the game of football and that position. They're always, not always, but a lot of times there's always like, well, is the backup better than the starter? You know, there's always that question. And you never want to be in that situation. But the biggest glaring, you know, examples of that so far this year are, you mentioned in Chicago, you've got Justin Fields, who was drafted fourth overall out of Ohio State, and he's a rookie. And then there's Andy Dalton, who played a long time with Cincinnati. I mean, Fields is clearly the future of that franchise. But you get into this situation of, you know, when do you start the rookie? When do you start the young guy? Do you throw him out there like Joe Burrow last year with the Bengals, and he's got no offensive line, and in week eight he blows his knee out and he's done for the year, you know? Or are you going to do what the Jacksonville Jaguars are doing with Trevor Lawrence, the number one overall pick this past year? They're just throwing him out there. Then you have a situation like in San Francisco, and in Chicago, they have said that they're going to go with Andy Dalton, I believe, is who they're going to start, but they're going to have Fields in spot duty. And that doesn't mean it's going to be the case the whole season. I mean, he can certainly come in. And then out in San Francisco, you've got a younger guy in Trey Lance that was just drafted last year. And then you've got Jimmy Garoppolo, I mean, who's led the 49ers to a Super Bowl, and they traded for him just a couple of years ago, you know, as Tom Brady's heir apparent, to get him out in San Francisco, who's young and good, but I think he's going to be the starter out in San Francisco. But how do you go in and work Trey Lance into your system? And so they're all different quarterbacks. I mean, Jimmy G can run, but you know, Andy Dalton's more of a drop back passer. He's a little bit older. It's a different offense when Justin Fields is out there. But it's just the Bears don't have an offensive line. I mean, he got his helmet knocked off on one tackle in the preseason, and like the worst case scenario if you're a Bears fan. I mean, you would watching every game on pins and needles, and so they're going to get some time to play. It's just when is the right time to work them in.
We're getting a couple of gremlins on the line, so we'll try and we'll persist with it. But just let's get the prediction so that when the Super Bowl runs around, I can get someone to lift the tape and play it back to you and decide whether or not we extend your tenure on this radio station. So who are the teams to beat, or who are the teams you most expect to see standing come the culmination of it all in a couple of months' time?
Yeah, I think the Buffalo Bills are really, really good in the AFC. I mean, Josh Allen got incredibly much better, took a big step from year two into year three, and I think he's going to continue to get better, and they've got a really good team. I think they've got enough to knock off Kansas City this year. I think it'll probably be those two teams at the end, and I think, you know, Buffalo can win it this year. In the NFC, I mean, if Tampa is healthy, I just don't see how they're going to struggle. I mean, their division is a lot weaker this year. You know, the Saints, my beloved Saints, are losing Drew Brees, and there's going to be a bit of a drop-off, I think. And not tremendous, but I think there will be some. And the rest of their division isn't really going to be very good. I think the NFC East is subpar. You know, you've got the Packers in the North, and then three or four teams, you know, out in the West. I mean, I just think that's a crapshoot. You can toss any of them out there. I think it's the Bucs' year, and I think you're looking at Tampa and Buffalo in the Super Bowl. And I mean, at that point, I'll go ahead and say it. Brady's not going to lose again this year. I mean, I can't believe I'm picking him at age 40, I think, to win an eighth Super Bowl. I like it.
Okay. Well, we will wait and see how that all plays out. Shep, there's gremlins interfering with us somewhere along the line, but we've got nearly most of the syllables you were throwing at us, so we're in good shape. Thanks so much for being with us.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Shep joining us there from the States. I can assure you that I have not intentionally broken all the equipment tonight. It is just one of those evenings where things are conspiring against us. But hopefully we're going to go from New Orleans to Clontarf and get a strong extension connection closer to home. Fiona Coughlin, former Irish captain, is with us. Fiona, how are you?
Good. I hope the Wi-Fi is strong.
Come here. Before I talk to you about rugby, Ellen Keane, homecoming. This is going to get very, like, this is going to be real parish pump politics now between you and I for the next minute or two. Your status, along with Brian O'Driscoll and Jack McCaffrey, as Clontarf's most famous sports person, is going out the window, because what a turnout for Ellen Keane around Clontarf last night.
Oh, it was brilliant. Yeah, it was brilliant to see all the kids out, the posters made. I saw some kids with songs made up about her as well, and, you know, so deserving. It was just great for her. It was great for the community to be able to get out and give her those well wishes that she so much deserves after those performances in Japan.
Okay, you're still my favourite.
Thanks.
Yeah. Right, we'll move on to the business at hand. We've had, you know, Dorothy Wall, Emer Considine and Adam Griggs out on media duty today. The Irish squad heading to Italy ahead of Rugby World Cup 2021 European qualifier to give it its official title. Ireland facing Spain, Italy and Scotland across a 12-day period from Monday. For people that don't follow the game and might go, ah, sure, Ireland will beat Italy and Ireland should beat Scotland. We've got Italy ranked 7th in the world, Ireland 8th, Spain 9th, Scotland 11th. One team secures automatic qualification for the World Cup. We are heading into a crucial two-week period for the 15s game in Ireland. Is that fair to say?
Definitely. Look, this is third time lucky to actually get this competition played. Supposed to be played before December, then it was supposed to be played in March, and thankfully it's now been played in Italy. So Italy have that home advantage as well. And the last time Ireland went to Italy, they actually lost over there back in 2019. So, you know, it is a tough place to go. And also, they welcome a few players back into their squad, particularly the likes of Jay DeFranco, who they base a huge amount of their game around. So it's a big task still. I know in the last year or the last 18 months, performances and scores went Ireland's way, but just, you know, it's a different tournament, different faces there, three new caps in the Irish squad as well. So that first up game against Spain is a bit of an unknown. We saw them play against Russia and the Netherlands in order for them to get their spot in this competition, but, you know, it's very hard to judge exactly where they're at. So Ireland really need to go out and put down a marker in that match, that first match.
Yeah, and the issue around this is that while there's familiarity around Italy and Scotland with the Six Nations and, you know, warm warm-up games and friendlies and everything else that gets played. Spain, who have come through, you know, the European Championships effectively, are the unknown quantity. So it's, you don't want to get arrogant and say, well, sure, Spain is the ideal game to get up and running with on Monday.
Certainly not. You know, you look at some of their players, a lot of them have played on the seven circuit for the last number of years, so they can play ball. It's just a matter of whether they can transfer it now to the 15s game. And, you know, they were impressive against the likes of Netherlands and Russia, but the standard, to be fair, was quite poor. So it is very tough to judge where they're at. But Ireland, I suppose, they'll do what they do. They're going to focus on themselves, their own game plan, and trying to really hammer home a really good start.
But match fitness is going to have to be an issue. And I know that great things were spoken about the 30 weekends they had spent in advance of the games they played, you know, in the Six Nations and what have you. But when you look at the Interpros a couple of weeks ago, is it fair to question whether or not some of the players should have been involved in the Interpros rather than playing behind closed doors games on Sport Campus Ireland?
Yeah, look, I suppose match fitness is going to be the same for all teams in this competition because no one has really played. It would have been great to see them playing in the Interpros to see where they're at. But I suppose you want to get that high quality of training of what you're doing and where you're at. And, you know, they probably would have had to spend too much time in the provinces then to actually get that quality work done. But, you know, I think it's just going to be the same for all teams when they go out there, that match fitness, you're not able to replicate it in training. So, yeah. You know, obviously if the Interpros had been a little bit earlier, but because of the way COVID was, it was never going to happen.
When we look at potential team selections, like we can look at a couple of players who aren't in the squad. Like I can't quite make sense of how Anna Capeless isn't in the squad. I don't know if that's something that you can see me straight on. There's a couple of players who've really impressed in the Interpros over the last weekend that you'd wonder if these games were taking place in a couple of weeks' time, could they force their way in? But overall, like, is out half primarily still the big area that Adam Griggs, the big solution that he has to find in advance for Ireland to have, you know, a playmaker that can guide us through these games, particularly in the absence of Hannah Tyrrell?
Yeah, look, I've lost count of the number of out halves we've had since the 2017 World Cup. We're up into the teens at this stage. Obviously, Hannah was there, had a good game against Wales in the Six Nations, was disappointing against France. Stacey came in then against Italy, was impressive, got player of the match that day. But then it's the backup to her. If you look across the squad, Lucy Mahal comes in, but I think she's been looked at in the 13 position. You have Enya Breen probably looking to play in the out-half position as backup, and she hasn't played any high-level rugby there. So, you know, it's a huge ask for that player to step up. And then you go and you look at the likes of Nicole Cronin, who's moved from scrum half to out-half in the Interpros, and she's playing remarkably well. There is a few things about selection. Anna Capeless, I genuinely don't know. She had a storming season there 2 seasons ago and hasn't featured since. So I don't know whether she's out of favour or she's just not training well. And, you know, it's all well and good to be able to talk about a squad, but when you can't see them in training, it's very difficult to know what they're at. Likewise, Ciara Cooney, she hasn't made the squad, but supposedly the reports I hear from Sam Monaghan playing over with Wasps have been very, very impressive, the type of player she is. And then you have the likes of Chloe Pearce, who's been player of the match for Munster for the last 2 weekends. She probably hard done by, but I suppose we have to focus on the players that are there.
Yeah.
You know, last season you look at the likes of Dorothy Wall, Bavin Parsons, what they brought to the game. And so we have to focus on the players that he has selected.
Yeah, when we look at the World Cup itself, like, you know, we had such a high in France a couple of years back when you were involved then. We had the disappointment of hosting a World Cup and the way it went. How crucial is it for Ireland to be at the 2021 World Cup, and particularly for the 15s game?
Look, for the growth of the game here, for the development, see players coming through, just that whole visibility piece, like, it's hugely important that we're at the top table and playing against these world-class teams to really know where we're at. And it would just be devastating, like, you know, not qualifying directly. Top 7 qualified directly out of the 2017 World Cup. Ireland lost that final game to Wales and finished 8th, not securing selection straight away, to have to go into this qualifier. And they have to win it. Do you know what I mean? I know there's another opportunity at the repechage down the line in December for the second place finisher, but they have to put the mark out here and they have to win this competition. And if they do that, they actually fall into a nice pool then for the World Cup. You know, they avoid some of the big hitters. But yeah, it's crucial for the game to get back up to the trajectory that we had after the 2014 World Cup.
There's going to be twists and turns, obviously, over the course of the couple of games. But just for the most part, what you've seen of Ireland and the development under Adam Griggs in recent years and what you've seen of the teams that we're going to face, are you more optimistic than not?
Look, I definitely think Ireland are favourites going in based on the last kind of 2 years. Their fitness levels were really impressive when they came back after COVID. Their basic skills were better than the other teams as well. It's just depending on what has gone on in the last couple of months. And as I said, the other teams are welcoming back players. Italy, you've got Franco coming back. Scotland have the likes of Jay Conkle and Sarah Bonner coming back. So they're huge additions to their squads, where Ireland doesn't, we don't have those big players coming back. But still, I put Ireland down as favourites if they can focus on the game plan that Adam puts in place. They remain injury free. There'll have to be some rotation of a squad because you've got three games in 3 weeks. It's going to be tough. But I'd have Ireland down as favourites.
Okay, we'll see how it plays out. Fiona, good to talk to you as always. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks a million, Damien.
Fiona Coughlin with us there. We're going to hear from Philip Jordan, a view from Tyrone ahead of the All-Ireland final after this.
Dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide. Game on.
Gaelic football.
And you are very welcome back to the programme. So earlier in the week, Shamie O'Shea provided the Mayo perspective ahead of Saturday's All-Ireland Senior Football Final, a throw-in at 5 o'clock, a match which is live on RT television and also over on Saturday Sport on Radio 1. So in a quest for balance and transparency and parity and everything else, let's hear the Tyrone perspective. Shortly before we came on air, I spoke to 3-time All-Ireland winner and 4-time All-Star Philip Jordan to get a view from Tyrone. And We focus upon the fact that they won those succession of three quick All-Irelands in the noughties, but you'd kind of forget that this is only the 7th occasion that Tyrone have been in the All-Ireland football final. So what is the level of excitement like around the Red Hand County?
Yeah, I think it's probably been a bit unusual this year, and that I suppose there's such a short space of time between the semi-final and final, and I suppose going into the semi-final, not too many people probably expected Tyrone to get to the final, and even within the county it was the same sort of, I suppose, feeling. But certainly over the last week or so now, we've seen the flags and the buttons up and the flags of the on the cars, and we've seen a few taxis painted as well, which is always good to see. So there's definitely a big anticipation. You just see the mood around the county lifting and anticipation for Saturday evening.
Obviously, we had the end of an era with Mickey departing towards the tail end of last year and Fergal and Brian coming in this year. Does this, in a way, has this exceeded what you think expectation would have been at the start of the year?
I think so. I think in relation to COVID, I think has been, I suppose, a big negative probably for Fergal and Brian coming in. Obviously, they've a different style of play they wanted to implement within the team. Probably not maybe as much as some of the media is making out in terms of the change and how they're playing the game, but having only, what, 3 league games and then going straight into the championship has been very tough for them to try and build any momentum, very little time to train the team in the early part of the year because of the COVID restrictions. So I think the one thing we've seen with this team, the benefit they've had as times went on, Tyrone have improved greatly as the years went on, obviously. Everybody remembers the trouncing they got down in Kerry, so and we've seen the turnaround they've had there 2 weeks ago. So I think we've seen the improvement in this team every game, and hopefully we're going to see that again come Sunday or Saturday evening. That's, I suppose, what all of Tyrone's hoping, and that's going to be needed as well in terms of if they want to be lifting Sam at 7 o'clock on Saturday.
And as odd as it might sound, considering the magnitude of the matches they've played over the course of the year, up until this weekend, in a way, has there been very little pressure on them because people have been looking at it as a rebuilding job, a new team, a new style of play?
I think so. I suppose in a way there's been a bit of pressure taken off, but as I said, because of the circumstances of how Tyrone have been able to prepare this year with the new management coming in, and people said if they were to win an Ulster title, that would be considered a good starting point for Fergal and Brian. So I think, as I said, going into Kerry, there was obviously all the COVID talk and the disruption that, I suppose, entailed. And nobody really knew, I suppose, the impact that was going to have. It's only within the squad, I suppose, they were able to see how the preparations were going. And certainly myself, from, I suppose, rating the two men that are in charge of the team very highly and rating a lot of the players, I certainly didn't expect them to beat Kerry. I thought maybe they'd be competitive for 50-55 minutes and Kerry would just pull away at the end. So it's definitely come as a surprise to most people in Tyrone for them to have got this far. And like I've heard some people say they're in bonus territory, but I think when there's not a Dublin or a Kerry in an All-Ireland final, I think both teams are saying this is an opportunity we might not get again. This is probably the best opportunity both teams are going to have over the next 4 or 5 years to win the Laird. So it's certainly not bonus territory. It's about a solid win come Saturday.
I was listening to Fergal Logan's interview with Marty Morrissey from the press night in advance of the final, and you know, he's throwing out that Mayo are the favourites and Mayo have the experience, but this is a Tyrone team that won't shy away from what's at stake on Saturday night, and have, you know, plenty of miles under the belt when it comes to significant days at Croke Park and the experience that goes with it.
That's it. Look, every manager's going to try and, I suppose, take the pressure off their own team and say that the opposition's the favourites. I think this is probably as close to a 50-50 final as I've seen, and I don't know how far back probably have to go to see something as close, maybe back as far as a late noughties. So, look, I think probably Mayo, maybe, I think the Boogies have been slight favourites, but as I said earlier, I think this is a game I'm finding very difficult to call, and I think I expect it to be tight no matter who wins. I can't see anyone winning this game comfortably. So, but the Tyrone team have had plenty of experiences. A lot of boys have won under 21 Lairns. It's maybe took them a bit longer than they thought maybe to be getting to this stage again. So the players like Matty Donnelly, Peter Hart, who Peter was one of the players that I played with myself in my latter career, which is quite a while ago now. So some boys have a lot of miles in the clock as well, and this might be the last real opportunity to have of winning the Lairns. I think like any good team, you've got the youth coming through as well, and Mayo was the same. Like, there's been a lot of players have suffered tough days as well before, but they've got that youth coming through, which has probably re-energised them this season and last as well.
I was loath to bring up COVID, but you've mentioned it a couple of times, so you've given me the entrance in. what have you made of the coverage? And come here, let's not shy away from it. There's an awful lot of people for whom a Tyrone victory this weekend, they'll put a little asterisk alongside it and question what's been at play and everything else that's gone on over the last couple of months.
I suppose when I heard the news that Tyrone looked at postponement, and I was, anyone that asked me, my response was, look, I'm a bit torn in terms of what should happen. It's an Laird semi-final, and I think the GA was well aware, and Kerry themselves were aware as well, of going through of a walk over in a Laird semi-final wasn't going to be good for the GA or for Kerry themselves. We've seen teams in the past, obviously, that haven't had that benefit of getting a match delayed, and look, none of us know, and I think maybe why there's been so much, I suppose, negative side or press in terms of what Tyrone has incurred has been maybe the lack of information in the public domain. But look, at the end of the day, we're talking about people's individual health, and you have to trust the GA, what they've seen in terms of the information they've been given and the impact it's had on the Tyrone squad, that they made a decision based on the facts. So, Look, I don't think if Tyrone had been put out of the championship, I wouldn't have overly argued about it, but they got the opportunity, and look, they certainly didn't get an advantage by the match being delayed. They were probably on the back foot going into that game anyway, and Kerry had ample opportunity to prepare for it. So I think ultimately at the end of the day, the best team won on the day, and that's ultimately what all of us want to see when it comes to championship football.
Yeah, and ultimately, you know, the whole issue around vaccination, it's a personal decision, and we're living in two, whether we like to address it or not, we're living in two different jurisdictions where there's a very, very different approach. But in a way, while Fergal Logan in particular has been very vocal in talking it down and not wanting to have COVID as a side story, it undoubtedly is a galvanising factor ahead of the weekend, because it does create this kind of a them versus us mentality, I think.
It certainly is. Look, every team, they're always looking for that simple edge. I think, look, when it comes to the match day, I don't think these siege mentalities that we talked about really matters that much, but I think it's during your preparation for games where it keeps players focused. Management want the players turn up for every training session to be fully focused, that they can get the most out of every session, so that they're the best prepared team come a final, and that's where these, I suppose, the criticisms maybe you see in the press. I'm sure, look, Mayo have picked plenty of things. Like, even back when we were playing, we had Pat Spillane, who's talking to football with Joe Brawley, criticising players. That's just, every management team always picks on something small and makes it into a big issue just to galvanise the team and get that focus going into every training session. So it's nothing new, and it'll be going on in both counties, and it's not, ultimately when it comes to Saturday, it's not going to make a big difference, I don't think, to the end result.
So in 48 hours time, we'll be well into the final, and you know, we're all expecting it to be tight, so the destination of Sam Maguire won't be decided this time in 48 hours time. But when, presumably, Fergal and Brian have the team picked in their heads at this stage, whether they've explained that to the players or given it to the players at this stage, we don't know. But is it a relatively easy team selection for them this weekend based on the performances players have put in the run to the final?
I think probably the big decision to have is where to start Callum McShane. Obviously, Callum's had a huge impact in the last couple of games, in the Ulster final against Mon and against Kerry last 2 weeks. So I think that's the big selection dilemma that they have. I think the rest of the team pretty much picks itself. From a personal point of view, one of the big strengths Tyrone have had this year has been the impact their bench has had. I think they managed just to sort of scramble across the line in the Ulster final. But I think considering that the five or six players that would have been starting that game out for COVID, that showed maybe the strength and depth that they have. They were still fit to win that game. But I think I would like to keep it that way. Keall hasn't played 70 minutes of championship football in 2 or 3 years, and I would like his impact off the bench. I think that's probably one of the key areas to be looking at. They probably feel the edge in that with Mayo going into the final, and look, I think at the same impact they've had the last 2 or 3 games, I think that could be crucial for Tyrone.
And we're looking again, and one of the things that all the previews are talking about is you're probably not going to have two sets of management teams or two sets of players who will get their matchups right, you know, or more spot on. So in terms of the winning and the losing of it, where do you see an advantage for Tyrone this weekend?
I think probably, well, I don't know if it's necessary, but I think it's a key focus area for Tyrone will be midfield. It was an area certainly they struggled against Kerry the last day, and they managed to come out on top. I don't think Mayo would, I suppose, give Tyrone the safe opportunities and allow them to go on ahead and win it. I think Tyrone didn't win a kick out against Kerry's kick out in the whole of the match, and they lost quite a number themselves. Now Morgan did struggle with his own kick out, so I think that's an area Tyrone really be focusing on. Like, Tyrone have probably one of the key aspects is that they don't have individual scars. I think they have a lot of very, very good players, a bit like Mayo themselves, and it's very rarely that one or two players that be the big influence on the results. So I think that midfield battle, I think whoever wins that possession battle is going to be crucial, and we've probably seen a bit of a change in terms of the football. Certainly started last year and has really kicked in this year, which we've seen so much more man-to-man football. I think we were having a conversation about individual matchups 2 or 3 years ago, wouldn't they be talking about it, because that's the style of play has changed so much now. We've got back to where it was probably in the late noughties. So I think there's so many different matchups across the board that it's very hard to pick out one. I just think that overall battle in the middle of the field and the possession game is going to be crucial, the way both teams play.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier, you know, it's a final without Kerry and it's a final without Dublin. Just from in a footballing context, how important is it that it will be either Tyrone or Mayo that will come out on top this year, that it's been shaken up after so many years of Dublin dominance?
Yeah, look, I think everyone was getting a bit, apart from the Dubs, I think everybody's getting a bit bored of seeing the Dubs win, and I think over the last couple of years everybody thought the one team that might be fit to beat them was going to be Kerry. And look, I think we've seen probably a change in football this year overall, after winning the under-20 title early in the season, and even down in Ulster, and me winning the under-17s. I think we've seen it's something that we want to encourage teams to talk about. Do we want to see tiered championships? But we need to give, I suppose, every team in the country a bit of hope. And certainly there's hope in, yes, Tyrone and Mayo are big football counties, but the fact there's no Kerry or Dublin in the Ireland finals, I think that's what everybody wants to see, ultimately, apart from the supporters of those two counties. And we want to see a spread of Ireland winners, and that's ultimately what the GAA need to see to let the game prosper throughout the country. So I think, look, it's easy from a Tyrone point of view saying that it's great to see none of them in it, but I think most counties would feel the same.
And just if I can take you back to 2003, 2005 and 2008, when three All-Irelands come in such quick succession, I presume when you're in the middle of it you don't have time that much to reflect upon the achievement, and you probably think these days are going to last forever. But you know, for the diehards in Tyrone, it's been a very, very long wait, and you just really do have to focus on seizing the opportunity this weekend.
Oh, it absolutely is. Like, look, as I said, it's not that long ago from Tyrone when they forced to learn, and as you're playing it, you do get caught up in the emotion of it a bit. But I think what you see the reaction of those people and how much it means to the people in the county that have seen so many defeats down through the years. But I think hopefully what we're seeing now is a generation maybe that were inspired by that team. I suppose we're talking, what, 18 years ago now, those fellas were maybe 6, 7, 8, 9 years of age. So I think that's one of the things that Mickey always preached to us was, look, you're setting the standard for the people coming behind you. And since that, getting the Ireland finals or getting the semi-finals wasn't enough for Tyrone. And hopefully what we're seeing is people that have been inspired by seeing Tyrone, Peter Canavan and Brian Digger lifting the Sam Maguire Cup, that they've wanted to get that sort of level. And hopefully if they can get over the line on Saturday, then that'll inspire another generation. And that's ultimately what every county wants, to want that continued success. And that comes from seeing winning teams and being inspired. And like, ultimately within sports in Ireland, there's a battle for the hearts and minds, and you want your own people in your own county to see Gaelic football as the top sport.
Yeah, and objectively as you can be in a situation like this, do you expect Tyrone and yourself to be celebrating when the dust settles come Saturday evening?
I definitely wouldn't use the word expect. I think there's hope, and I think probably the heads, I don't think it's ruling the heart, but I think the head, I think, still says that Tyrone maybe have a slight edge. But I think it's very, very close. I'm pretty hopeful for them to get over the line and hopefully improve right.
May the best team win. Philip, thanks so much for being with us. Thanks for your time and good luck. It's hard to say good luck because then the Mayo lads will be on now complaining that I'm being... what I'll say is may you and Tyrone get the result you most deserve come 7 o'clock Saturday evening.
Very diplomatic.
Thanks for being with us.
No problem.
That's Philip Jordan chatting a little bit earlier just before we came on air. We'll go for the neutral perspective on the final on the programme tomorrow evening. Just to let you know, Shane Lowry, a late birdie. He's moved to 200 par in the clubhouse, an opening round of 70 at the BMW Championship. Jonathan Caldwell, Graham McDowell, both finished at 1 under. Bit of a disaster for Padraig Harrington on his last hole, a double bogey, 7 on the par 5 18th. So he had been the leading Irish player. He's now back to level par after a 72. And Cormac Sharvin, 3 over par with 12 holes played. The one shot lead there is at 8 under.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on. Check out the podcast
on the RTÉ Radio Player app.
And you are very welcome back to the programme. We are on the home run between now and 7 o'clock and we're going to finish tonight with our regular nutrition slot in conjunction with Green Farm. And delighted to say that Orla Walsh joins us. Orla, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good to talk to you. This is the first time that you and I have had the pleasure of this conversation, so I'm hoping that you're going to see me straight and I'll be a reformed man with how I look after myself by 7 o'clock. But that's probably the biggest challenge you'll ever take on if we end up having that to be the case.
I'm a miracle worker, don't mind me. I'll be fine.
You'll be beatified by the end of this. we're going to chat a little bit about supplements and nutrition and that aspect. But I want to talk to you about a very interesting article that we noticed on The Athletic during the week where they've basically done a study into the use and the proliferation of sleeping pills within high-level football. Now, we often focus on strength and conditioning, nutrition, recovery. But is enough attention paid to sleeping and the role of sleeping in, the life cycle and the productivity of elite athletes?
I think certainly at an elite level, they look at all aspects. I know when working with the Rio Olympics, the athletes and their sleep, it was all taken very seriously and there was preparations made months in advance to make sure that they were sleeping well. And you see, sleep is really important for an athlete. Your immune function is working all through the night to make sure that it staves off infection. Growth and repair happens. There's loads of really important factors for athletes and they need lots of sleep. They need to sleep more than teenagers even. And some of the best athletes around the world, you'd be impressed by just how much they sleep. I think Federer, it's incredible. He sleeps like a toddler. Mm. And it is really important. And I think all these lifestyle aspects of elite sport are really, people are paying more and more attention to. And I think that's why the study was done, because they're like, well, what's happening? And I guess with sleep, when athletes know the importance, then they might start using things to actually help them achieve the hours that they need, or else in some cases be using these sleeping tablets to help them go to sleep after big games or before big games and things. And I guess that's where problems can arise. Mm.
And we'll touch upon that in a minute, but is this like a one-size-fits-all solution? Like, are you into a situation where if you're an elite athlete, go to bed, don't set the alarm and stay in bed until your body naturally wakes up? Or is it almost like a program which is devised in the same way a nutrition program would be devised, a strength and recovery? Is it that level of planning?
Oh, there's a huge level of planning in it, certainly because, there could be travel involved, which obviously makes a big difference. And games late, so training late at night or having a game late will make a difference. You see, so many factors are at play here, but just take caffeine, for instance. Mm. Most athletes will take caffeine for performance, and they take around 3 to 6 milligrams per kilogram, and they take that maybe 30 to 60 minutes before they start or when they have to perform. And that's a big chunk of coffee, or it's a big chunk of caffeine tablets or gels or whatever they're using. And that's a central nervous stimulator. And what that does is it just soups them up, and it it really does enhance performance, but unfortunately there's a come down afterwards, and caffeine has a half-life of around 6 hours. So if you take in caffeine, 6 hours later it's half gone. 6 hours later, after that, it's another half of it's gone. So it takes ages to leave the system. So if they take it with evening games, for example, they can be wired all night. So you use nutrition strategies, among other things, to try and counteract the caffeine they may take before performances, but also the fact that they will be wired after a great game.
Because I think famously, Roy Hodgson, when he was England manager, one of the sticks that was used to beat him at one point was England were to play Poland in a World Cup qualifier. I think the match, if I remember correctly, was rained off because of torrential rain. The guidelines or the rules are it has to be played within 24 hours. England were really sluggish when the game was eventually replayed, and the excuse that Roy Hodgson was accused of using afterwards was, my lads were, you know, souped up on caffeine pills for the original fixture, then couldn't come down off the caffeine pills and couldn't play the second day because they were sleep deprived. But when you think about it, there's actually logic behind that argument.
Oh, there is. And you see, they're going to be drinking caffeine during the day. They'll be having coffees and teas and stuff like that. So, you know, it's the build-up of caffeine. But, you know, there's lots of things you can do with regards to nutrition to actually help sleep. Well, firstly, like, there is routine aspects to help sleep. Like, it's a good idea to go to bed at the same time every night, and it's a good idea to wake up at the same time every day. Generally speaking, normal people need 7 to 9 hours, but athletes will need more because, you know, there's so much more growth and repair, and their immune function and stuff like that needs to work harder. And, you know, during our sleep is when we consolidate memory as well. So, you know, keeping a routine is important. Watching the caffeine take outside of performance enhancing, to the coffees and teas. There's certain things that we do. So, for example, if they have high GI carbs with their dinner, they'll actually find it easier to go to sleep that night, a bit of a carbohydrate slumber. It sounds like pseudoscience and completely made up, but 2 kiwis 1 hour before bed might help. And we also use cherry juice. Now, cherry juice is also, I'm sure you're aware, used as a afterwards to help with recovery, but it's actually a natural potent source of melatonin. So cherry juice, they might take maybe 30 to 60 mils of it in water and have that once or twice a day, depending. And they might have that as well after they play in order to enhance sleep.
Yeah, and even, I was chatting about this before we came on air, and, you know, I think that the British and Irish Lions got ridiculed a couple of years ago when the players brought their own pillows with them on a tour. And, like, I know you've touched on it yourself that, like, Team Ireland, I think there were special sleep kits provided for the athletes in Tokyo. And that's all really important, not just for the sense of home from home or familiarity, but obviously the, you know, even the physical science behind comfort and being as relaxed and as used to your surroundings as you can be.
I know, I'm sure one or two of them brought teddy bears as well. But you see, the thing is, you could be rooming with people who snore or who are loud sleepers, or, you know, all of these factors. So they might bring things like eye masks because darkness is really important for the sleep hormone. They might also bring loud fans to drown out noises, maybe, you know, even traffic or the person snoring. And they might use things like white noise machines as well to make sure that their sleep is, you know, they can make the most of their sleep and go off to sleep. But yeah, absolutely, comforters are certainly something that is brought. But it is taken more and more seriously, but I'm not surprised by the use of sleeping tablets. But unfortunately, and I'm sure many medics would agree, sleeping tablets are one of the worst medications that are provided to people far too often. So that's why doctors are reticent to give it to anyone.
And just to touch upon that, because anyone like the and I know The Athletic is behind a paywall and people may not have got the opportunity to read the article, but you've got stories of footballers who can't remember the journey to matches, guys who've been brought on and then have had to be substituted off straight away and have no recollection of playing in games. And there does appear to be a culture which existed of, well, if, you know, Johnny is doing this in the dressing room and Billy is doing this in the dressing room, that I'm going to try it as well. But the most important thing with all of this is this should be done with the advice of a professional who can put you on a program and can advise you about what to use if you need to use it and when to use it, and more importantly, when not to use it.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think as well with, and it comes with vitamins and minerals, supplements, all sorts of things, as well as medication. When people see that they work, they use far more. I had one athlete that at a very important world stage couldn't perform because they took, I said, take three caffeine tablets. And of course, they were like, well, if three is good, six must be better. Oh, and all God. Of a sudden, they were vibrating towards the start line and couldn't perform and had to bow out. So, you know, there is a problem that when people are even prescribed them responsibly will take them irresponsibly. But I'd say most medics would shy away from sleeping tablets because of so many negative impacts from them, and addictive nature as well coming off them isn't pleasant.
Okay, yeah, that's the most important thing of the whole conversation, is never launch into these things without the advice along the way. Orla, great to talk to you. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Orla Walsh with us there with Green Farm as part of our regular nutrition slot. Now it is almost time for us to bid farewell. There's a special programme on the way on 2FM after 7 o'clock, a special bilingual programme. It's celebrating the end of summer with Iha Mór Gaeltacht X. Gaeltacht X was an online initiative headed up by Conra na Gaeilge with the aim of giving secondary school students a taste of the Coláiste Saoire, the summer colleges in the Gaeltacht. So stand by for that, which is on the way after 7 o'clock. Tara is here after 8, and from all of us here on the programme, we'll bid you farewell until 6 o'clock tomorrow evening. Programme produced by Ronan Lawler, Jarlett Holland, our broadcast coordinator. From Damien O'Mara and all of us here, good night.
Green Farm. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Farm's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. Available in selected stores nationwide.